area looks for a second championship in a row. Hear play-by-play announcer Bob Fitzgerald give you updates, news, and scores as the series continues. The journey to the second championship has begun. Championship updates brought to you by Greg O'Donnell on the next generation of KGO A10. Pick up the premier edition of KGO On The Go, presented by the North Beach Restaurant at the San Francisco Chamber of Commerce. See where the KGO personalities like to go in the Bay Area. It's KGO On The Go, your exclusive guide to the Bay Area's best attractions, getaways, and culinary experiences. Visit the San Francisco Chamber of Commerce for a free copy. Presented by the North Beach Restaurant and the next generation of KGO 810. From the city that changes the world. This is KGO San Francisco, Oakland, San Jose. The next generation of KGO 810, a Cumulus station.
And the KGO news time is 7 o'clock. In for Nikki Maduro, I'm Kim McAllister. Bernie Sanders making no mention of presumptive Democratic nominee Hillary Clinton at his rally in Washington, D.C. tonight. The rally comes...
Listen and engage. The Drex Radio Show, weeknights 7 to 10 on KGO 810.
And away we go on the Drex Radio Show, live and local in the Bay and around the world at KGORadio.com. And I want to get right to it. Allison Treasel, criminal defense attorney from Los Angeles and KTLA. And also her website is Wild About Trial. Allison, thank you for joining me.
Of course.
The Stanford rapist thing is not
explosive.
It's explosive and it's boiling over. And the latest is, I do believe, well, I mean, there's all kinds of outrage. And what is the latest? Just bring us up to date.
So Kamala Harris spoke today.
That's right.
She's
yes.
outraged over it. She doesn't understand how what could have been a maximum sentence of 14 years came down to 6 months in jail, where he'll probably only serve 3 months. And the victim really never had a voice. And the focus was always on the defendant and his swimming career and what a good boy he has been. However, that has since been refuted by text messages and emails that he sent documenting his drinking, his drug use, and kind of not being the kid that was portrayed in court during his sentence.
And as a matter of fact, his character witnesses regret their support.
They do.
They do.
They are now saying that they apologize. I mean, you know, this petition asking that the judge has been recalled has received, I think, 500,000 signatures. The judge has received death threats.
Absolutely.
And people are generally outraged at how light the punishment was for a fairly egregious crime.
Allison, this reminds me of the Affluenza trial and that kid down there in Houston.
Yeah, I mean, and I think that the father coming out and saying, I can't believe all of this for the 20 minutes
of action. Right.
Yeah, that was an outrageous statement. It was really awful. And it was the victim had written a 12-page, very moving, you know, emotional letter. And one of the things that people are talking about is why was his swimming times brought up in court, but her pain and her tragedy never was.
As a matter of fact, one of the things that's going on is the victim herself has said she wondered, and this is her statement, if I had been sexually assaulted by an unathletic guy from a community college, what would his sentence be? If a first-time offender from an underprivileged background was accused of 3 felonies and displayed no accountability for his actions other than drinking, what would his sentence be?
Well, we know historically it would have been state prison, and it would have been a lot of state prison. You know, yes, he has to register as a sex offender, but he was charged with 3 felonies, and, you know, to receive it. Now, I will say, and I want to present the other side somewhat, and that is that probation is also to blame here. Probation did recommend a sentence much in line with what the judge gave him. You know, probation talked about his lack of criminal record, his remorse, and so it was really they took the first stab at this, and they recommended probation. So, not that the judge, not that there shouldn't be outrage for the judge, but this was something that probation had recommended. And I'm sure they're going to reevaluate how they look at these cases. And someone who comes from an affluent family and goes to a very good school, and whether they should be treated any differently. I'm sure they're going to get a ton of criticism as well.
Now, the judge, Aaron Peskey, who issued the six-month sentence, is, as you mentioned, receiving threats and death threats and all of these horrible things for the lenient sentence. How do you feel about that? Should he step down, be recalled, anything like that? Because I don't think that he's going to.
And I'm not sure if he should. I mean, the message that you send when you do that is, we don't like the sentence you impose. And by the way, I don't think the district attorney has, and the district attorney that actually handled the case is asking that he step down from the bench. But you know, it's a very dangerous precedent that you set when you ask a judge, when you say, look, we don't like the sentences you impose, therefore we get rid of you. But you know, this may be one of those extreme cases where people are so outraged, and there was a case similar to this out of Texas, I believe, where it was an underage child, and the offender got probation, and the judge was essentially forced to retire because there was so much anger and hostility.
Even today, Vice President Joe Biden said to the Stanford rape victim, "You are a warrior," and went back to this backlash. And let me ask you this, Allison: could be part of the backlash not only be the light sentence, but also what Turner's father said in the statement in court, that his son shouldn't be judged for 20 minutes of action?
I think all of us are outraged. I think that's an outrageous statement. I mean, it is so insensitive to this woman that went through hell. And to say that his son, who really did a horrible thing, you know, to only view his life in that, well, in those 20 minutes, he destroyed somebody's life.
Okay, let's go back to the character witnesses for a second. And now they're regretting their support because they're being deluged with nasty social media posts and all of these things. When you are a character witness, you're sworn in. So if you told the truth, why would you regret it?
Because of the backlash. Because of
that's right, but that's not their fault.
You are right, but you know, I've seen this. I've been practicing for 20 years, and I've seen that when the public scrutinizes. If you will remember, I represented the woman who was accused of killing her husband with a coffee mug. She was the U.S. Open referee, and she was all charges were later dismissed against her. But the people that spoke on her behalf initially were really chastised. I mean that you know, they'd known her for 30 years, and she was an incredible person. And, well, you didn't know that she had an affair. Well, she actually didn't have an affair, but there was so much public outcry that this woman could have killed her husband, and how could these people support her? So I can say this is not a new phenomenon. This happens.
All right, I want to go to another story today because this one will continue to explode, as you said, and we'll continue to follow the fallout. Breaking news tonight as I came on the air, Jared Fogle, okay, the Subway spokesman who was sharing child porn. He said today he filed an appeal claiming his 188-month sentence was too harsh because he claims he didn't widely distribute child porn. Instead, he says he only showed one child porn video to one person he was dating when they were in a hotel room. And the U.S. Court of Appeals didn't buy that argument. But
when you have nothing, okay, when you have no arguments, you know, and you're grasping at straws as he is, he's trying to say, look, I know my conduct was bad, but I didn't spread the pornography so broadly that the distribution charge should stick. Now, it's not a good argument. It probably will go nowhere, but that's what his attorney, that's what his attorneys thought was the most compelling argument to make.
Yeah. All right. I guess, you know, you're right. They have to try to come up with something, and I guess that's right. The best they could do. All right. Well, we're rolling through quickly here, and I know I don't have you for long, so I did want to ask you about Maria Sharapova being banned from tennis for 2 years. And you know, because of this medication called melatonin that she's been taking for 10 years for a magnesium deficiency.
By the way, which is banned in the United States. FDA has not approved it in the United States.
Right. So that's what I wanted to get at with you. So what? She's playing all over the world. She's not an American.
Right, but they're claiming that this is a performance-enhancing drug. The International Tennis Association or whatever, I think it's the IT, International Tennis Federation, banned it in January.
The ITF, right, yes.
She continued to take it. And she claims, which is not a very strong argument, that she didn't know that it had been banned. You know, these are things that people, if it's not her, her entourage, her handlers should have been on top of. She hadn't disclosed that she was taking it. Although they found that it was unintentional and that she, you know, wasn't intentionally cheating the system, there was some fairly damning statements that they did make, you know, that she had been taking it for years, that there was no medical necessity for it. And she is going to appeal it. There is a court of arbitration for sports. She is going to appeal it. Her attorney feels strongly that the ban will be either lifted or shortened. But generally speaking, this is the punishment that is handed out to athletes who unintentionally take a banned substance. Now, Nike, interestingly, who had backed off for a minute, has come back now and is standing behind her. But she was the highest paid female athlete in the world, and that is no longer the case.
Well, by the way, as you mentioned, this drug only became illegal at the beginning of the year in January. Now, melatonin not used over here, but in Russia they use it for an irregular EKG or a family with a history of diabetes. So that's why it really caught my eye when I read, well, the FDA doesn't approve it. Who cares?
Right. Well, I think in you know, it's interesting to see how the FDA does see these drugs. But ultimately, it was an international organization.
It's an international organization. Right. Okay. All right. That just caught my eye. I'm thinking, well, she doesn't fall under the FDA regulations. But
right.
Apparently,
you know,
does.
People are arguing, look, she's lived in the United States since she was seven. And, you know, that being said, the problem here is that they're not going to make an exception. I do not believe they're not going to make an exception for her when this is the standard punishment handed out to people who unintentionally take a banned substance. So I think we won't be seeing Ms. Sharapova on the courts for the next 2 years.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Allison Treasel. WildAboutTrial.com is her website. Criminal defense attorney in Los Angeles. I thank you very much and have a great night.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Allison.
All right, bye-bye.
All right, we're going to take a break and we come back. Is Richard Simmons now Fiona? Fiona! How's Caitlin? What's up? We'll talk about that. Would Whitney Houston still be alive if her family had accepted her lesbian relationship? That and more on the way on the Drex Radio Show on KGOA 10. With a look at traffic, here's Lee Graham.
On the next generation of KGO. A10.
Endless Campaign Records brings you the Bernie Sanders Collection.
Can't stop addicted to the shindig.
Pat Thurston, I'm sending this out to you.
He may not have the delegates, but he has the hits.
Staying alive, staying alive. Never say never.
Feel the music and feel the burn. Yes, even the losers will love this album.
Give me something to believe in.
Like the Ever Ready Rabbit, this CD just keeps going and going and going. You won't be able to stop listening. The Bernie Sanders Never Say Die Record Collection.
You can't always get what you want.
Available now until the Democratic convention to 99% of the people.
Oh, but we love Bernie. It just didn't work out. I don't know. I don't know if Pat Thurston's over this. We should call and check on her.
I can't see that she would be.
We did roundtable with John Rothman on election night, and my God, we were so disappointed that it was 60-40 Hillary.
I was surprised at the spread.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
I thought it'd be like, you know, really close, 45-45, something like that.
Like 45-50.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, close. Much, much closer.
Yeah.
Yeah. She ran away with it. All right. Got to get to Bobby Brown having sex with ghosts. First, what's going on with Richard Simmons? What time is it?
What time is it?
Drop your drawers and get it fixed. The National Enquirer says the reason we haven't been seeing much of Richard Simmons over the past several years is because he's becoming a woman. All right. This story, you know, where I stand on this, leave the man alone.
Yeah.
I've gone over this several times over the past several weeks. Supposedly he's gotten breast implants. He's taking hormones. He's living privately as Fiona. They even claim there's a topless photo of him showing off his quote, womanly breasts. Now, even though he stays mostly out of the public eye, he sneaks out on the town every once in a while. And he's supposedly going all the way, surgically speaking. He's even talked to doctors about building him a vagina, which paints an interesting visual.
Building him a vagina.
Yes. Richard's reps say it's not true. He's still saying that Richard is just taking a break from public life. He also said, quote, when he decides to come back, he'll come back. He's a human being. I don't know what's wrong with me today. He's a human being. He deserves his privacy. Now, it's a little hard to believe that Richard is taking female hormones when he was spotted Monday with the full beard and mustache. Did you see that? The paparazzi, like, two blocks away. Oh, there's Pat Thurston.
Oh, okay. Let me grab it.
Unless the facial hair was fake and was just meant to throw us off, which would be some pretty brilliant man from Uncle kind of stuff. You know what I'm saying? All right. What'd she hang up? Did she wimp out?
Bad line. It just pooped out.
All right. I've got to move on. Bobby Brown, the ghost story. He's having sex. And
I thought you said toast at the break. Having sex with toast. I'm like, what?
No.
A ghost. Somehow ghost makes more sense than toast.
Okay. Bobby Brown has been everywhere pimping his new memoir. So this is why we're hearing a lot of these great stories. And he's doing a story with 2020, an interview. But mostly, you know, he's saying controversial stuff about Whitney for maximum attention. Like what he told Us Weekly yesterday. For years, there have been allegations that Whitney had a lesbian relationship with her best friend and assistant, Robin Crawford. Whitney always denied it, but Bobby says in the book that it was true and Whitney was bisexual. He said Whitney probably denied it because her family didn't approve of such things, and her mother, Sissy, even insisted Robin be fired, and that may have led to Whitney's death. Bobby told Us Magazine, quote, I really felt that Robin was accepted in Whitney's life. If she would have been, Whitney would be still alive today. She just didn't have any close friends around her anymore. And obviously Bobby Brown was gone. So, well, and needless to say, Bobby Brown is pimping his new book and his new memoir. Here he is. This is a clip from 2020 about his sexual encounters with a ghost. And by the way, let me just say this for the record. It was not consensual.
I can't even believe I'm going to ask you this, but I have to. You had sex with a ghost?
A ghost, yeah, yeah.
Come on, man. Tell me about it.
I moved into this house. I bought this mansion in Georgia. So this was a really, really spooky place. But yes, one time I woke up and, yeah, a ghost. I was being by a ghost. I wasn't high.
That was my next question.
I wasn't high.
That was my next question.
Wasn't
were you tripping?
High at all.
Were you tripping?
No, I was not tripping.
That was the one time that he wasn't high. And it was not consensual. I could only be so fortunate. All right.
Pat had called in. Her line was really bad, but she says she will never be over Bernie losing.
She's never going to be over it.
No.
Oh, honey, I give you a big radio hug. You know, it was so fun. Do you know that I had never met Pat Thurston?
No.
until
that's so
Tuesday
strange.
Night.
I work
right.
with both of you.
For
that's
years
really
now,
weird.
Right? Right? Because while I was out busy dying last summer, you know, she was in for me all the time. But we never met each other.
Oh, that's right.
So you know, I'm sitting in the conference room before we went on, doing the roundtable thing, watching Trump talk, and we're getting ready to talk primaries on the air. And I hear her voice. I turn around. There she is. Of course, neither one of us know what the other one looks like.
You didn't recognize each other.
And I gave her a big hug. It's like, oh, you're like my sister. We're family. It was
a beautiful
thing. She
sends you her love.
Oh, she's just fantastic. And we had so much fun with Rothman and Pat. And so every time that we have to go political at night, we're all going to hang out together. So it's going to be a lot of fun. Was there anything good that happened in Cleveland last night? I thought this was cool.
Now, show your patriotism and continue a Cleveland tradition as we ask the best fans of the NBA to sing our national anthem once again, led by Jessica Ruiz.
Cleveland, please join me in singing our national anthem. Oh, say can you see?
Now, I love this. Okay, let's stop before the bombs start bursting in air, because that's what happened, and I was out. The rest of it got ugly. Well, fugly, the game. Didn't end well. But there's tomorrow night, and there's Monday night. So we'll be bringing it back. Let me see here. Oh, it's time to break. Oh, and the other great thing that happened was Justin Bieber got his ass kicked. And that's what you get for walking around with a Cavaliers jersey on when you're rolling up to the Westin. Actually, I have to tell you, in all fairness to Justin Bieber, he did a pretty good job because there was a monster big dude that he offended. I don't know. Something happened.
I saw the video. He did a really good job of hitting the ground.
Yeah. But he did clock the guy.
Yeah,
It wasn't a solid roundhouse, but you got to give him a little bit of street cred. Yes, the believers still believe he still has his pretty face, so... All right, let's take a break, and we're going to be back. We're going to talk movies with Tim Sika coming up here next. Don't go away. You're listening to the Trex Radio Show on KGO 810. And with a look at traffic, here's Mr. Lee Graham.
You're listening to the Trex Radio Show. Trex Radio Show. On the next generation of KGO 810.
So last night on Kimmel, the old and new cast members of Ghostbusters all reunited, okay? And, obviously Dan Aykroyd was there. And he told the story of how he came up with the idea for the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man. Remember that?
I was just looking for something from my childhood that was innocent in a movie. And it was an innocent kind of thing. That we used to have the Angelus, a puffed Marshmallow Man. He was a cop. And in the movie... when my friend John DeVicus and Michael Gross designed the Stay Puft, you know, in the film, when we brought the script, and then the day that Stay Puft showed up, Billy did this great line. He looked at him and he said, and he's a sailor. And it was so funny when John DeVicus came up with the first drawings. I said, marry the Pillsbury Doughboy, the Michelin Tire Man, and the Angelus Marshmallow Man, and put them all together. So he draws them, and then I opened the FedEx, and he's a sailor. And then...
Yes, and he was a sailor. And that's the story of the Marshmallow Man, Tim Sika. And he is the president of the San Francisco Film Critics Circle and CelluloidDreams.net founder. And we're going to talk about movies. Thank you for joining me, Tim.
Thank you for having me, Drex. Now we know how the Marshmallow Man came to be in Ghostbusters.
I know. Isn't that cool? And when we come back from the next break, they all sang the theme, the Ghostbusters theme. So we'll get to hear that.
Oh, no. I missed that. I can't wait to hear it.
Yeah, I'll play it for you. Now, we're a day early because the Warriors will be winning tomorrow night. That was last night.
Yes, they will. Yes. They will definitely be winning, yes.
Yeah, and this is great. I'm just going to tease the top of the hour, because at the top of the hour, we're going to be talking to a gentleman about bad vibes. And, you know, it was one of those things, Christopher Macklin is his name. It was one of those things when the game started and we were in the first, and I'm thinking, this is a bad vibe. The bad vibe.
You got to get his take on that and
right.
what that means from his perspective. Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah. I think when you sense that, I think you should go with it, you know.
That's good what he's going to tell us, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And how to get rid of it. But let's talk about movies. So we've got three opening this weekend. By the way, let me see here. What did I have to tell you? Oh, I know. I don't have it in front of me because I have a million pieces of paper in front of me. But remember the pop star movie that you talked about last week?
Yes.
And that thing bombed.
Yeah. Well, my theory is that it was too sophisticated for general audiences. Really, I think it was way too smart.
It was a boy band movie.
You know, no one knows really why these movies fail the way they do, especially with a cast like that, with Andy Samberg, who's sort of box office gold. It's a rap kind of musical satire. I didn't think it was going to go through the roof, but I thought it was, you know, it got smoked at the box office,
yeah,
and
number
I don't
eight.
Know why.
What?
Did you see it? It's really funny.
No, it's just the story floating around the internet that it was a horror. Well, the story is Andy Samberg bombed. That's the story.
Yeah, well, that's sounds like a little bit of a cheap hook, but because obviously it didn't make the money, but he's great in it, and I think he's so good that if the Academy paid more attention to comedy performances, they would be thinking about nominating this guy for Best Actor, because really, I thought he was that good in the movie.
Well, let's talk about movies. So, should we begin? Shall we with Warcraft?
Warcraft, if we have to. Drex, here's a movie that to me is emblematic of everything that's wrong about Hollywood movies. This is a fantasy film. It's based on the Warcraft video game series, right? And it's got a good cast. Travis Fimmel is in it. Paula Patton, Ben Foster, Dominic Cooper, and some others. And it dramatizes, and I really use that word somewhat sarcastically, these encounters between orcs and humans, and all this takes place in this vast number of locations, which I'm told are going to be instantly recognizable to those familiar with the video game. And video game is the key phrase here. Warcraft is Hollywood movie as video game. This is a giant, expensive, widescreen video game as movie, and aside from the scope and the expense and all the money that they spent on this movie is visible on the screen, it's just, it's unendurable. It's loud, it's confusing, it's exhausting. It's what Hollywood movies have become, video games. And the weird thing is, this was directed by Duncan Jones, who's the son of David Bowie. But I bring him up because, several years ago he directed this science fiction movie called Moon that starred Sam Rockwell. And everybody listening to me should check out that movie if they haven't already. It's called Moon. And it was a smart, really well-scripted piece. And you wonder, I think it's safe to speculate that he did this for the paycheck, because there's nothing else really in it to recommend. There's way too many characters. It's hard to even explain the plot or follow or even remember who these characters are. Maybe if I was familiar with the video game, it would help. But, it is spectacular. The CGI and the stop motion are breathtaking. I read somewhere where there's more than, I think, like 2,000 visual effects shots in this movie. But in the end, Warcraft, for me, amounted to nothing more than a bloated, cartoony CGI mess.
Okay, let me ask you a question. So I remember playing Warcraft, and it was a great.
Is it good? It was a good.
Right. Good video game. But what was the premise of the movie? Was it like you were? No.
You're gonna embarrass me here. I don't even remember what the premise of the movie was.
I'm feeling your vibe. There is no plot, Drex. Yes, I'm feeling it.
It's like a bunch of orcs and humans and half orcs, and they're all running around and.
Well, my point was, like someone's playing the video game, or is it just stand on its own as a film?
That's a really good question. I think it's trying to stand on its own as a movie, but from what I gathered and from what I read, because I had to go check out the synopsis because I thought, what the heck is this? I can't even follow this thing. That they did try to make it relatable to people who did play the game and did know the characters, and I guess somehow suspected that they knew you know, they knew what the character's moves were going to be. I mean, that's what I surmised from what I read. So in answer to your question, I think they tried both. I think they tried to make it just as a movie and relatable to people that,
to those who
you know,
play.
Know right. the game. Yeah. Okay. So you're a big Warcraft fan.
No, I'm not a big Warcraft fan, but I have played it. So I'm familiar with it. But I was just wondering if you know, from that visual perspective of watching the movie, are you watching it stand on its own, or are you actually kind of sort of playing along? I don't know.
Yeah, well, I mean, I just took it as a movie, and, you know, I mean, I'm just feeling really cranky tonight. It reminds me of the night that we talked about Mother's Day. Was I ever on it then?
Like, well, you worst now. Movie ever. Worst movie ever.
Yeah. Well, this is... I don't know. I mean, all the movies I'm going to talk about tonight, they're all these, you know, CGI things. And, there's one exception. But the CGI stuff, man, it's very, very tiring. It's very, very exhausting.
Look, they don't want to spend any money.
Right. Well, they don't want to stop to breathe. They just keep moving. And then there's one spectacular thing layered over another spectacular thing to the point where you just want to really. I a couple times during Warcraft, I just wish I had my pause button on my DVD player just so I could stop it, you know, just to say, OK, let me take this in. You know, but it never stops to breathe, these movies. And this is just, God, oh, my God.
Over the
torture
top.
Would be to be forced to sit through it again.
Okay. At Generation Drex is my Twitter account, and you can tweet me. Somebody said to me a couple weeks ago when we were talking about it, I was like, you know what, the thing, Drex, you and Tim Sika just don't like CGI. I said, no, we've discussed this before. No, that's not a fact. No.
Yeah, I think I like CGI when it's in service of a story, but when it's the story and when it's being used to just, it's pointless virtuosity when they just do CGI for the sake of CGI. And this Warcraft movie, if it did have a story, I don't know. I don't know what it was. And again, we're going to talk about Now You See Me Too. That was a little better in terms of the story, but again, they overcompensate with these CGI things to the point where you're saying, you know what? They didn't need to do this. This is really, I mean, they didn't need to do it. And I like CGI. I think it's an important tool of the cinema. I just don't think anybody's really used it artistically yet.
All right, let's take a break. And in all fairness, we're going to run some of the very best superhero movies of all time past Tim Sika. Yeah, so that everybody can get off my case about superhero movies. All right, we'll continue in just a second. You're listening to the Drex Radio Show on KGO 810.
The next generation of KGO 810. Now, back to the Drex Radio Show. Drex Radio Show. I feel my
heart. Oh, well, I promised to play. Let me see here. the Ghostbusters. I might have to do it coming
like
up.
The Ghostbusters to me.
I know. You know, I'm yicking yacking.
Who are you going to call?
Who are you going to call?
Ghostbusters.
Yes. Okay, here they are. Let's take a listen to some of it.
Okay, ready?
If there's something strange in your neighborhood,
Kate McKinnon.
Who are you going to call? Ghostbusters.
If Leslie Jones.
Something weird and it don't look good?
Melissa McCarthy.
Who are you going to call?
I am not afraid of any ghost. I am not afraid of any ghost.
If you're seeing things running through your head.
Wow.
That sounds kind of lame.
Yes, like that first trailer. Remember we had that discussion.
Yeah.
Worst trailer ever on YouTube.
Yeah. I remember that. Yeah. I'm kind of looking forward to it, though. I think some of the criticism has got just because it's women, maybe. I don't know.
Oh, sure. There's a lot of that. Yeah, there's a lot of sexism going on.
But,
yeah.
You know, the women that are in it are really funny comics. So, you know, I got my fingers crossed. And the director, too. Oh, geez. The guy that did the, what's his name? That guy.
That
the guy.
Guy
that does those female comedies really, really well. I'm blanking on his
That's
name.
That's fine. We'll
yeah,
get
anyway,
to it.
Anyway, I think it's going to be good. I think if people give it a chance, I think they're going to like it.
All right, let's talk briefly about these two other movies. Now You See Me 2 and The Conjuring 2.
Yes, Now You See Me 2 is, guess what this is a follow-up to? Now You See Me. It's a magic caper movie. And the original was like 3 years ago. This is a sequel to that, and it's another magic caper movie. I don't know. Maybe this is a new genre in the making, magic caper movies. But most of the cast is back. Jesse Eisenberg, Mark Ruffalo, Michael Caine, Morgan Freeman, Dave Franco. It's got a great cast, Woody Harrelson. And the magic quintet, the Four Horsemen, they're called. They return in this installment, and this time they want to expose this unethical, maniacal tech magnate played by Daniel Harry Potter Radcliffe, who's a welcome addition to the cast. And by the way, Drex, we're going to be talking about this closer to the film's opening, but Daniel Radcliffe is also starring in this Sundance Cause celeb buddy comedy called Swiss
that.
Army Man.
Yes.
You know what he plays in that, don't you?
No.
He plays a flatulent corpse. And he is currently going on tour, doing interviews for the film, and he's taking the corpse corpse of himself on the PA tour. I don't know,
he's Harry Pooper.
Yeah, like a ventriloquist dummy or something. Anyway, back to Now You See Me Too. It's basically more of the same that you got in the first movie. I think if you like the first one, you'll like this one because it has everything that was in the first one, pumped up times 10. And again, we're looking at a little bit of CGI overkill here. Your caller, when they said, or not the caller, that the guy that tweeted and said, don't like CGI. I really like, and I said that it's never really been used artistically. I was one of the few people, I want to take that back, because I was one of the few people that really liked Batman versus Superman.
That's right, you did.
And that was filled with CGI, but I thought it was a great story, and I thought the CGI served the story. So anyway, that's one example. Anyway, I just wish Now You See Me 2 felt a little more human and had more character development and less overt reliance on technology. Again, but that said, I think lovers of the first film, and it was a popular film, certainly popular enough to warrant the sequel, are probably going to they're going to be coming back for more, and they're going to be loving it.
How scary was The Conjuring 2?
Ooh, it had its moments. Supernatural horror on full display. How scary was it? Pretty scary. It's a fairly decent ghost story. It has a fair number of chills. It's directed again by James Wan, who did the first Saw movie, which was just this horrific thing. But I give this movie props because it tends more toward the psychological rather than the graphic and violent type of horror. And I'm going to be a crab tonight. The movie's nothing we haven't really seen before. I think it's best when it tends toward sort of being off to the side of the mainstream, and worse when it tries to cater like it does in the scene where Patrick Wilson tries to charm the family who are being terrorized, right, in this house of ghosts. And he does this impersonation of Elvis Presley singing, "I Can't Help Falling in Love with You." I mean, it's just weird and wince-worthy. But another strength of the movie, which I liked, is its sound design. The louds are really loud, but the silences are so silent, they're deafening. And they really help to create some, suspenseful, nail-biting moments. So, I don't know. Bottom line is that there are movies like The Haunting and The Shining and The Innocence and more recently The Witch, that I think do and already have done much better with The Conjuring 2 just seems to be copying. The film also suffers from excessive length. It's 2 hours and 13 minutes, so it kind of strains your patience. In summation, some good scares, respectable performances, okay direction, but to folks who've seen a fair amount of ghost stories, movies, been there, done that.
Okay. All right. Very good. So as I promised, we talk about maybe perhaps a couple of the best superhero movies of all time.
Ooh, what are yours?
Well, let me see. Well, I'm going to go. Number five is Captain America Civil War, which I definitely liked. And that's 2016. Yeah. So but then also The Dark Knight from 2008.
Yeah, that's pretty tight. Yeah, that's right. A good one.
The Avengers is number three from 2012.
Yeah, that was a good one, too.
Number two is Spider-Man from 2004.
Yeah, see, all new ones, you know, the ones I like are a little older, but
well,
go ahead.
I'm going to ask you, the number one is The Incredibles from 2004. So, you know, back in 2004, there was a lot of this going on, too.
Yeah, yeah. I like the original Superman, the Richard Donner one, the one with Christopher Reeve.
Okay, yes, that
was really great.
I like that.
Did you ever see a movie called The Rocketeer?
No.
About the guy that the stunt pilot that, you know, discovers this rocket, a rocket powered jetpack that allows him to fly without an aircraft. Billy Campbell was in it. That's a really good superhero movie. Unbreakable. Have you ever seen that? It's
yes, that's number 10 from 2000.
Ah, okay. Well, that's good then. That's a very fascinating and unusual, like a superhero kind of thriller film. It's M. Night Shyamalan who did The Sixth Sense. And it's very, very good. It's about the security guard who kind of slowly discovers that he possesses supernatural powers. And it's killer, you know?
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Well, thank you very much, Tim Sika. We will talk to you again next Friday.
Thank you, Drex, for having me, and you have a good rest of week.
Okay, thank you, sir. All right, we're going to take a break, and we'll get to the vibes. Yes, what the vibes that you have say about you next on the Drex Radio Show on KGOA.